Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Todd Dexheimer to the show. Thank you very much, Todd, for joining.
Yeah, thank you again.
Todd is the CEO of Venture D Properties LLC. He started investing in real estate 2008, mainly single family, and then he kind of graduated to the multifamily. So at this point, he holds a portfolio of over $35 million worth of real estate investments across 550 units, over 25,000 square feet in five states. So big enough introduction. How are you, Todd?
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you coming on the show. So tell us a little bit about you as a human first. Family, kids, cats, wives.
Yeah. So, I'm married. I've got two kids, a boy and a girl, 7 and 11. And then we just love living life. So really enjoy spending time with each other, doing fun things, you know, camping, skiing, hiking, you know, just exploring. We push our kids' boundaries as much as we possibly can, push their limits, make sure we get them out of the comfort zone, and we love doing it, and our kids love it as well. So that's what we're all about as a family. I do have a dog as well. She's old.
Okay. I mean, it's important. Another family member, because I have four kids and a cat, and they always say, hey, here's the fifth child. So
yeah, exactly.
Your third kid. I guess one, the oldest kid at this point.
Yep. Yeah, well, ours too. So yeah, and we live in Minnesota in the Twin Cities.
That's great. Nice and cold.
Nice and cold. Yep. You got it. It's I think it's about 1 or 2 degrees right now.
Well, enjoy the winter treasures.
We love it.
Yeah. I like cold weather too. Yep. My mother and sister still live in Rochester, New York. It's like Perfect. Minnesota.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's cold and snowy. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about your real estate. So first of all, at this point, are you mostly active or a passive investor? Well, what's a good mix? Are you doing, a lot of deals kind of actively, or you pretty much have grown to the point where most of your real estate is passive?
No, really, nearly everything is active. I do sometimes invest in other deals. Of course, I invest my own money into my deals as well. But yeah, no, very, very active sponsor. We are very active in trying to continue to grow and acquire units. This year, we're hoping to grow our portfolio as well. So we're definitely active.
So then let's talk about opportunities. So where the deal flow is coming from today? Where are you finding deals, and how are you finding deals?
Yeah. That is the trick, right? Where do we
the holy grail. How do you find good deals?
The deal is the real key word there. There's a lot of properties out there that are for sale right now, but there's not a lot of deals out there. And so that's the challenge. It's really honestly, the biggest thing is just cultivating relationships. So we work really hard at cultivating relationships with brokers, with key brokers in the markets, property management companies, appraisers, inspectors, just to try to really understand what properties are out there, who's selling, what's potentially distressed, lenders too, attorneys as well. So we're just really trying to create relationships to dig up opportunities. Most of our properties, they come from brokers. And quite frankly, it seems like most of them come after a deal like falls out of contract, or potentially even off market. We'll a lot of times we'll find a property in the market we really like, and then we'll approach a broker and talk to them. One of the key brokers talk to them about the property, and we've got several under contract through that way. So, anybody looking to find properties, you got to build relationships. That's it. That's key.
Yeah.
And you got to have a good reputation, right? And so that's the other important thing. Like I said, the last couple of deals we've got have came through deals that have fallen out of contract with a buyer, and they come to us and say, hey, we need somebody that can close on this and close on it quick. Are you guys that group? And they already know the answer is yes. As long as the pricing works, the answer is yes.
Yeah, it's a great wisdom. I love this, because when the moment the seller loses a buyer, they are pissed off. They are unhappy. They need to find another buyer. And now they actually have, I guess, a more motivated seller because they're anxious and something is driving them to take action. They're more flexible probably to discount the deal just to get the thing moving.
Yeah. Typically, we're finding we're able to buy it for a discount off of what it was last under contract for. Maybe not a huge deep discount, but typically we're able to find a discount. And you know what? The broker's also, for lack of better words, desperate as well because
they lost the commission.
They lost the commission. And look, they're embarrassed, right? Because their buyer didn't go through and they were part of that transaction. They only have so many cracks at getting the property sold. And if they can't get it sold, somebody else can. Some other broker can.
Yeah, three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, and sometimes one strike and you're out in this business.
makes a lot of sense. So quick question, what states, where's your sweet spot? Where are you finding your most of your deal flow?
Yeah, right now we really like Tennessee, Kentucky. Those are the two states that we really like a lot. We are also in Ohio, like some areas in Ohio. Those are kind of the markets that we're in right now. We're looking at a few other markets throughout the country that we like, but we haven't, you know, it takes a while to dip into a new market to really get your teams orientated and make sure you're going to have success when you hit the ground running. You know, you don't want to sit there and have to fire property managers and so on.
Yeah, I agree. That's my other big question is how do you manage those things remotely? Do you have footprints? You have certain cities with multiple assets with the property manager? Because you basically have to have local presence, a strong presence to operate these assets.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's key is if you're coming in and buying small properties, first of all, it's very hard to get good results, in my opinion, at least in what I've experienced. So we want to make sure that, you know, if we're going to come into a brand new market, we either have to buy a couple properties at a time, or we got to make sure that first property is a good sized property and there's opportunity to buy more. You know, challenging to come into a market, in my opinion, if you're buying much under 200 units to start with, because you've got to have that team in place, and it's hard to get a team in place when you don't have much for them to take serious. Good property management is key. That's so critical, and you know, so we want to make sure we've taken and said, wait, I don't want to be a part of that market because we can't find contractors that we feel fit what we're trying to accomplish. And so we've backed out of markets that we really like because of that aspect. And we go into markets that are maybe not quite even as strong as some of the markets that we back out of because we can actually find the teams.
That's a great point. I really love this point. So the way to think about this is you are all about the execution, not necessarily as much about location. People say location is important, but if you can't execute, doesn't matter what the location is, you're going to collapse because execution fails. Yeah. So you can find a great asset, you just can't execute the strategy.
Yeah.
So I assume you have part of what you do is value add, right? Is that generally what you focus on?
Yep, absolutely. And we're doing a fairly deep value add on our properties. We're typically putting 10,000 or more a unit into renovations. This last project that we bought just a few months ago, we're going to be putting 36,000 a unit into it. So
per door, right?
Per door.
And what's the acquisition per door typically?
Boy, that's going to depend on the location and the type of property, but anywhere between like 50 and 75, maybe up to 100, depending on exact location.
Yeah, it makes sense. And what are the cap rates generally when you, I guess if you're getting into deep value add, the initial cap rate is almost not as relevant as the...
Yeah, oftentimes we don't have much of a cap rate at all when we're getting into the property because they're distressed. So, you know, the last property we purchased was 70%, 75% occupied, just in horrible condition, absolute terrible property. I mean, D-class property in an A-class area. And so we're going to be able to renovate it to a very high standard. And, you know, the comps around us, we've got a really big upside for rents and for sale price. You know, the rents we're able to raise by about $750 a month per unit.
Yeah, that's a rare case. You're saying deep property in an A area. That is like a sore, broken down, semi-boarded asset in like a really nice neighborhood.
It was. And
how do you even find them? Like for what I've seen is you could find B neighborhood and a C asset. Like there is some discrepancy.
Those are typically what you find, right? Yeah. You've got maybe the class down, right? C minus, and you're in a B area. That is a kind of our typical deal that we're typically, you know, that we're usually going after. And those are, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 per unit renovations. You might be coming in distressed, might be at, you know, 80, 70, 80, 85% occupancy. And we can bring it up to where it needs to be. But yeah, this one was a special property, owned by an ownership group that just didn't take care of it. They didn't know what they were doing. They were trying to manage it themselves and they really ran it into the ground. So we were able to come in.
So you don't mind that heavy of a lift. We've invested in some of these super heavy lifts and it really is a function of the company and operator. The risk profile goes up substantially, but it's only mitigated by the competence and ability of the operator to run the 100%. Project through the life cycle and get it to the end. Because if it's half the way done, it's you can't have, you know, can't deliver a baby at 90%. You have to finish the thing. Otherwise, you don't get this thing done.
Yeah, it's a different deal than your typical value add where you can renovate 30% of the units and oftentimes you can sell the property for a pretty good profit. This we have to renovate all the units. If we don't, those units are going to be vacant or if we're trying to keep them occupied, it doesn't work. It's just a conflict of interest.
Yeah, and not only that, you have the tenant mix, right? I mean, some people, years ago, there's a good buddy of mine, you probably know him, Corey, Big Kahuna.
Corey Peterson.
Yeah. So he says, year one, you renovate the units. Year two, you renovate the tenants and change the tenants.
Yeah.
It's true. If you're lifting the class, the lift is substantial, you got to go change the tenants. Unfortunately,
100%.
People who pay, you know, class D or C minus rent, they ain't going to pay class B or A rent for sure.
Yeah. And honestly, these people shouldn't be there. They're not being taken care of. They're just not. And it's a sad situation. And you know, we're doing everything we can to make sure we take care of the people that are there right now and make sure that we can help them get into a new place too. So we've got some programs in place to help them transition and move to a different place to help them out financially and make sure we're taking care of the people that are already there. But they got tiles falling off their shower walls and it's a wreck. It's a disaster.
Yeah, I agree. For sure. You definitely want to take care of the people. It's the most important thing out there. Yeah. One quick question. How are you dealing with COVID in general? So we're still in the middle of COVID. This thing is not going to be over overnight. Are you seeing people gaming the system, not paying rent, any of that kind of no foreclosures, no evictions? How are you dealing with all that?
Yeah. First of all, how we're dealing with this is clear communication with our residents, making sure that we're communicating well with them on what's going on, make sure that we are helping them find resources to pay rent if they need any of those resources, make sure that's an open line of communication that we're taking care of our residents first. Of course, make sure the health and safety is in place in our buildings as well. The other thing too is, you asked if people are taking advantage of it. Absolutely. But the people that are taking advantage of it, in my opinion, are the people that have been taking advantage of any type of loophole they can get away with at all times. So do we have some people taking advantage of it? Yeah. But it's the same percentage of people that, you know, now we can't evict them, but it doesn't mean we have a higher amount of eviction cases pending. We have the same amount. It's just the same percentage. We just can't get those people out to get the other people that we would be dealing with it back in, you know? So yeah, I mean, I've got a resident that hasn't paid a dollar of rent since March and I live in Minnesota and this property is in Minnesota. They haven't paid a dollar of rent since March. There's zero possibility to evict them. And, so now today they owe me like $18,000, you know?
It's a challenge. You can't do anything about it, unfortunately, for a while. I don't know when this is going to end. But
you know, in other states, we can evict. We can evict in Kentucky, in Tennessee, Ohio. So we are evicting as needed. But again, we're trying to work with them first.
They're willing to work with you.
Yes, and most are. Some aren't, but most are wanting to work with us. And so we're finding programs for them to be able to get them the help they need to be able to get them through. And so we don't have to displace them from their house, but we are still evicting in the other states.
Yeah. I hear you. And it's a challenging situation. Obviously,
it is
health and safety and you care for people and At the same time, it's also this, because you got to pay the mortgage, right?
Yeah.
Investors invest with you. You got to generate them a return. So it's yeah. kind of you're trying to be both a good human being helping the tenants and residents. The same time, you have fiduciary duties to your investors, and you got to pay the mortgage at the end of the day. It's kind of a delicate balance. So
yeah, it is. And sometimes, and you got to be aware of the situation. And so for instance, the person that owes us $18,000, I wouldn't be at all upset to evict them. I wouldn't feel bad at all because they owe us $18,000. They still have their full-time jobs. Nothing's changed in their financial position at all. They've got their stimulus money.
They're gaming the system. That's the word.
100% gaming the system. So I wouldn't feel bad to evict them. Other people. Yeah. That we want to work as much as we possibly can with them to make sure we keep them in their house.
Yeah, that's the most upsetting thing today is that people are abusing the system. And I know some people, okay, be very careful. There's no excuses for, yeah. like you said, they have their job, they have their income, the government send them additional checks, they have the support. And at the same time, they're choosing not to pay rent for the reasons that you have nothing to do with this. I mean, you took good care of them. So it's a fairness question. Very quickly, so... how would people get a hold of you? I'm going to ask you a couple more questions, but before I don't want to run out of time. What's the best way to get a hold of Todd? If they're interested to look at your projects, chat with you, and so on.
Yep. So they can go directly to my website. That's probably the best. It's venturedproperties.com. So it's venture, and then D as in Dexheimer, properties.com. And then they can get to all my information. I've got a free kind of ebook there that they can download and take a look at information on multifamily and syndication on all that kind of stuff. And then they can connect with me. I've got my podcast and I do some multifamily coaching as well. I run some other educational stuff. So they can connect all through that website.
VentureDeepProperties.com.
Yep. Absolutely.
We're not done yet. We have two, three more minutes. So let me run through a couple more quick questions, but I wanted to get that out of the way so people can reach out. There's a place to get a hold of you. So what happens today with the return? If people are interested to invest, you got to give them PPM, all that stuff. What kind of returns are you seeing forward? Like new projects, what cash and cash, returns and what total return, which is cash flow and then growth?
Yeah, That's challenging right now. We're obviously, it's weird because we're seeing compressing cap rates. Property values are going up, yet in most markets, rents are actually going down. I think there was negative 1.5% rent growth in the U.S., although, some of the markets we're investing in have actually had some good growth, some really good growth. So we are, cash on cash is tightening. Typically we're able to average about that 8 to 9%, sometimes greater than that, but 8 to 9% cash on cash through a 5-year hold. And
that's an average on a 5-year hold.
That's for the investors, on average. And depending on the asset class, depending on the exact plan, it might be slightly less, it might be slightly more, but right around that range. And then as far as IRR goes, I mean, we're trying to target anywhere between 14 on a little bit more stabilized, better located asset to 16 plus on a little asset with a little higher risk profile.
Yeah, I appreciate your sharing. It's great insight because you gave, I want to say, realistic numbers. Some people play with the IRR math and they still say, hey, here's 25% IRR. Well, how did you do that? You come up with some crazy assumptions.
Yeah, look, if I view a property as a 20-25% IRR, first of all, I check my numbers carefully. And if I still feel like it's there, I'm going to lower expectations. I don't want to show my investors that because look, there's so many things that can happen in these investments. I don't want to promise them or make it look like we're going to give them an amazing return. And all of a sudden we end up with a return that's at, 16 or 15%, that's still a healthy return on IRR. And they're mad at me because we told them 25,
Yeah. So I really like and appreciate that. As an investor myself and as a fund manager, I have to say that it's a very delicate balance that sponsors walk and fund managers. both having legal disclosures and setting expectations very conservatively, and on the other side, using that as a marketing tool. So too many people gravitate to the marketing side, and then they make them look rosy. And then when things don't perform well, you know, it was an optimistic assumption. But what you said is actually the right way to do it is to set expectations conservatively and then beat them.
I might lose a couple investors because they see somebody else's PPM that shows a 20% IRR and mine only shows a 16, but that's okay. This is just is what it is. And in the end of the day, my building very well could perform much better and my investors are happy.
Yeah, it shows your character, right? You're a conservative person. You're trying to make the right type of delivery to the investors. Right. The being honest and truthful and having high integrity is very, very important. And I mean, I share the thoughts. I would rather be conservative than rosy. And at times it's not pretty or not as pretty, but it's the right thing to do.
So right thing to do.
I greatly appreciate any final thoughts, any book you want to recommend, any wisdom, any old saying, anything.
Man, I got like a million thoughts I could give, but a quick book, How to Win Friends and Influence People is one of my favorite. The other one's Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. Those are two great books for anybody looking to be in any kind of business. Those are great books. And final words to people is look, if you're looking to own a business, if you're looking to invest in real estate, if you're looking to make a difference, you got to take action. That's it.
Thank you. Appreciate your wisdom. Appreciate you coming on the podcast. And hopefully we'll do it again. And I'm looking forward to being a guest on your podcast. Thank
Absolutely.
You kindly, Todd.
Yeah, thank you.
And take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFun.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.